first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go. I listened to the recording in my car, keeping it endlessly on repeat and trying to find some missing clue that could be the final piece of the puzzle. From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go. The only piece of evidence I found from her murder. The laptop on my lap was warm, and each time I heard it, the memory of seeing pictures of her broken body appeared in my mind. I'd blink and it would temporarily disappear. Only this time, it remained, seared into my soul. My eyes tightened and I rested my forehead in my palm, waiting for it to pass. It was said to be one of the most brutal cases, and while I wouldn't go that far, I knew if the perpetrator wasn't caught, it would only continue. From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
No survivors.
I lifted the manila folder. It had rough edges from being hastily opened over the years and a coffee cup-stained cover. I wondered which detective had managed to be so careless. It bulged from having so many pieces of testimony, even the more outlandish ones added to it throughout the years. I opened it and saw her black and white photograph. The older papers were yellowed with age, with the fresh white ones added underneath. It was a photograph submitted by her family, one I stared at countless times previously. She was white, with a wide smile that didn't reach her eyes, shoulder-length hair, and a trio of three freckles close to each other. I found her pretty, yet she wasn't memorable. The sort of person you would notice and forget about moments later. Caroline Thompson. First, she had gone missing back in February of 1972, having gone missing from a music festival, and there were rumors circulating that she was a groupie or was the girlfriend of one of the band members. Her parents say she was out with friends, and she didn't have a boyfriend to speak of. No one knew the truth. The videotape recording the crime had October 1972 as the date she was murdered. It was delivered to the police department with no contact information, no postage stamps. It arrived in a yellow envelope that some rookie threw out by mistake. Potential evidence destroyed. The tape had no evidence other than the deep voice of her supposed murderer. People tried to decipher where the murder site was. All it looked like was a room inside an abandoned warehouse. Her body was found on October 2nd, 1975, inside an abandoned motel going through renovations. Her corpse was perfectly preserved. All the blood outside her remains was coagulated, rotted, and filled with fly larvae. Her throat had been slashed with surgical precision, her eyeballs removed with the optic nerve still intact, and she had no wounds to demonstrate she attempted to save her own life. No injuries on her hands or arms. There was no other bruising on her body. Her body wasn't frozen or preserved in any way. The documents said it was cool to the touch and nothing more. It was a mystery that shocked the nation with fears of a serial killer roaming the streets. Even with all the murders that frequently take place, this one became beloved by the media. Especially since there were reports of her showing up all over the country. First on the East Coast, up north, then to the West, and finally down South. Never staying in one place for very long, a couple of months at most. It started out as sightings, blurry, black and white, and modernity gave the rise of crisp images. The items behind it were scavenged from websites, underground newspapers, and from Good Samaritans, who only wished to help. Conspiracy theorists or crime fanatics who follow her case are convinced she is part of a government conspiracy or some type of advanced human. MKUltra, aliens, and other outlandish theories. The problem is, they're both absolutely correct. I had enough clearance to know something was going on, but not enough to receive untampered documents. Each page had writing with parts blacked out to conceal certain words or sentences, no doubt with information that could solve the case. I lifted my cup of disposable coffee, some trash from some fast food chain, and sipped the hot liquid. The bitter taste only encourages me to keep moving forward. Outside my car, the rain got heavier and pounded heavily on the roof and hood of my car. Condensation built up along the windows, and I used my hands to clear it so I could see outside into the dark. The light buzz of the streetlights lit up the empty streets. 3 a.m. I let it play again.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
No survivors.
In all of these sightings, none of them bothered to try to talk to her. Some said she didn't feel normal, that they didn't feel safe when she got too close to them. However, she never threatened or physically hurt anyone. Occasionally, Caroline spoke. Reports varied about what she said. The voice, the faceless man in the audio, wasn't AI, which the US government had in the early 70s. It had been assessed several times. Whoever this mysterious murderer is equally unknown. Never found. No idea what his appearance is. He wasn't likely to be young back then, and nor was he old. If he is still alive, he would be old, and I doubt he was still alive. It was a natural speaking voice that hadn't shown up anywhere else, except one, apparently. A policeman was working and answered a phone call. He reportedly identified himself as a police officer, and the voice said,
"Keep an eye open for her. She's a beauty, isn't she?"
He recognized the voice, tried to call over his supervisors, and then the line went dead. The call came from a payphone, and since this was back in the 70s, there wasn't any surveillance footage to assist them. We don't know whether or not it was a prank. However, the details of voice were kept confidential and out of the public space. It was leaked in the 90s, and every so often we get contacted with recordings of the voice. Usually some stupid kid pranking us to record it for their channel to get a response. I figure he's dead. There were a few similar cases before that were assumed to be copycat killers, and after all, nothing concrete. Unfortunately, I knew the truth. This was one of many cold cases I was expected to work on, bringing fresh eyes and more advanced technology to the investigation. I'll be meeting with everyone involved on the case, and speaking to every officer involved, even though many are now retired. Some struggled to maintain their careers, dealing with heavy substance abuse, mainly alcohol, and consequentially dealt with breakups or difficulties in their families. The case impacted more than simply Caroline. I wasn't sure how they would react to being contacted about the case. All agreed, that some more hesitant than others. It was the reason why I drove out to the middle of nowhere. They're older now. Memories change and can alter as people try to make sense of the past, especially when pieces are missing. I checked myself into a motel that was stuck in the early 70s. There was wood paneling on the walls, thick and worn carpet, and the dim light made it difficult to see. Somehow still managing to cling onto business, and I pondered whether or not it was worth it to stay in my car, and feared it would be plagued by bedbugs. The door opened with a loud, obnoxious creak, and I stepped inside. The musty smell of mold filled the air. I had to hit the bell several times. The elderly woman looked exhausted, and I apologized for coming at the late hour. I told her there was a vacancy sign-up, and she waved off my apology. I wondered if she was the owner or one of the more long-standing employees. Number 7. I went and parked out front. The car park was deserted, and a couple of the rooms had been boarded up. I opened the room, and it was bare bones, but fortunately clean. I checked the bathroom, basic and boring, yet hygienic. Next, the mattress and bedding. All, fortunately, were the same way. Finally, I went to flop on the bed. Local gossip was a double-edged sword. Either offered a different glimpse into someone's character, or it was filled with nothing but rumor. In the morning, I came out for the complimentary breakfast and spoke to the lady, Martha. I asked her about Detective Lawson. She told me he was a local boy who got promoted before heading off to the big city. I kept it vague as she told me he had to return when the Thompson case happened. He became a recluse, his marriage ending, and he pushed away all of his family and friends. Even out here, the death made its mark. I left and drove to his home. It was modest, small, and if he lived in a major city, there would have been no chance he would have been able to afford it on his income. The lawn and garden were tiny, with an old brown hatchback out the front in the driveway. Everything looked stuck in the 70s, but well-maintained.
I walked to the front door and knocked. Soon, the old man approached. He was thin and carried an oxygen tank to help him breathe. I didn't think I'd get a chance to have this conversation with him again. He invited me into his cramped home. There were piles of household items in places where he hadn't got to yet, and I didn't like leaving him once I was done. No one should live like this, but duty calls.
Make yourself welcome. Coffee, tea. I should have something in here.
His voice rambled off. I heard the kettle go off, and he came back in with two cups of coffee. I put it down with a cup holder and stood to make myself useful. I brought in the tray, telling him I was happy to help, and he waved me off, telling me he can do it himself. Once settled, I asked if I could record him, and he nodded in agreement. I recorded him both on my phone and through an old school recorder, just in case one failed.
I knew one of you would come to speak to me before I died.
The retired detective began. He gazed off outside into the street rather than look at me.
I thought of this day for years, and I don't know where to begin.
Start wherever you like. No pressure.
I had seen murders before, usually gang-related or domestic violence, crimes of business or passion. This was something different.
He sighed.
I've never seen such a broken man. It didn't make sense. She was naked, her body completely hairless.
It all checked out. Beauty standards were different back then.
All the furniture had been taken out of the room. When we got there, her entire body felt like someone took it out of an ice cooler. The meat was perfectly preserved. We saw her face at first. The rest of her body was covered. We thought she was sleeping.
He shivered at the recollection.
Her throat wasn't stitched up. It was left open. The gore was filled with maggots and rotted.
He gestured with his hands, three buckets.
One bucket for certain parts. She looked so young. We couldn't tell if it was done by an ex-boyfriend. She had no enemies, wasn't involved in any crime, and from what I could tell, could have been anybody's daughter.
Tears of sadness and frustration pricked at his eyes. I had to mentally push aside the images of the crime scene I saw and focus on the conversation. He wiped the tears away with a tissue and continued.
Her clothes were nowhere to be found either. No murder weapons at the scene. They never worked out what it was anyhow.
I listened silently, not interrupting him, and waited for him to continue.
I didn't see the videotape first. That was Detective Bradley. He told me that it looked ritualistic in nature, and I saw it too. It was short, around 5 to 7 minutes long. It only showed the body, how she had been posed with a flower in her hair. It was I can't remember.
He paused.
Will you be speaking to Bradley? We lost touch after.
The voice trailed off. Yes, I'll be speaking with him. And I'm happy to let him know you were asking about him. I took a sip of my drink and continued. I will be. I'll be speaking to everyone involved in the case to see if they remember anything. And I mean anything at all. I encouraged him. He studied my face, trying to find something, and seemed satisfied.
I thought I saw her. She smiled at me and disappeared in the crowd. I couldn't tell anyone. They would have thought I was crazy.
He shook his head.
I tried to tell my wife, but I couldn't. It wasn't the only time I saw her over the years.
A long sigh of relief, a weight lifted. Again, the conspiracies came back. Not that he had clearance for me to be honest with him and tell him the truth. I hated allowing people to think they were losing their sanity. However, I was no whistleblower, and it would jeopardize the case. Can you tell me about her? What did she look like? He gave me a hurt look, and I assumed that he thought I doubted him. What was she wearing? I clarified.
It was different each time.
He said, a hand resting under his chin, his eyes moving subtly as he tried to recall the memories. I didn't rush him and waited.
I saw her once in the 80s, maybe the 90s, but it was quick, and then in the early 2000s, she wore things you'd expect from each decade, you know, the trends.
I nodded my understanding.
It never lasted long. She was smiling, but it wasn't a happy smile. Her eyes looked strange.
He shivered. The memory frightened him. What was different about her eyes?
They didn't move. They were dull eyes.
His voice quivered. All of this, I hoped, wouldn't be too much for him.
No soul.
He whispered, suddenly looking even older than his years. The answer did not surprise me. From the notes, many others had experienced similar dealings with her, and classification meant he had to go to his grave in the dark. I tried to probe him for more questions, however I knew he was done, and I didn't wish to outstay my welcome. I think it's time for me to leave. I stood, walking to him, and offered my hand for him to shake. He accepted, his grip still firm, and I took my leave, packing my equipment inside my briefcase. It was dusk outside, with fading light around me, and I walked back to my car. I still had others on the list I needed to speak to. I got in the car and drove back to the motel, still deserted. By the time I got back, it was nighttime, and it was darker than usual. I unlocked the door, looked around the room, and it felt much colder in here than it did outside. I saw condensation from my breath. I dropped my case on the floor, then went into the bathroom to check, and there was nobody there. I had a feeling I wasn't alone.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
I jumped at the sound. I rarely carried my firearm with me, especially when I was visiting homes where I wanted people to feel safe, and regretted it. It was muffled, and I realized it came from my briefcase. I opened it up and heard it again.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
All my equipment was off. I checked it all by turning it all on. Everything was working correctly and lit up. The recorder of the old man's interview was also intact and without any sound issues. I checked my phone. It was on silent, and there was no reason for it to make a noise. I checked the outside with a small flashlight for any tiny speakers or something that could make noise. It could possibly be an innocent prank by the local teens, and I would have passed it off as such. The line from the recording had been leaked by an unknown source suspected to be a police officer's son. However, this was never proven, and now it is freely available on the internet. I found no source of the sound. Perhaps I should have reported it or called my supervisor. Maybe. However, the mental health of anyone involved in the case always declined sharply when conducting the case. The next person on the list was in a permanent mental health facility. Detective Smith, a man who had worked on a considerable amount of grim cases, finally broke during this case. I didn't have time to be concerned. I set my alarm on my phone due to another long drive ahead of me. I showered, changed, and did the usual things to prepare for bed. It was 9:30 p.m. when I finally laid my head down and drifted off to sleep. My phone beeped at 5 a.m. It was still dark. I got up and organized myself for the day. I double-checked the room before I would be leaving for good. The sun was barely creeping up, and early morning mist surrounded the outside, giving things a particularly spooky look. Given my line of work, I knew there were many things left unexplained or the public was not aware of. My ability to be analytical gave me an edge in this line of work. I went to the front desk and handed in the key to the lady behind the desk, thanked her, and told her my stay was fine. She told me I was always welcome back, and I made my way. It was a 2-hour drive to the facility. Before I started my search, I needed to get clearance to speak with him, and there was always a chance he or the hospital would refuse me. Reports say there were many online investigators who would try to lie to get in to speak with him and had even ended up causing violent outbursts from him. I made it before midday and found a small hotel to settle in at. 50 rooms, max. Clean, relatively cheap, and with few frills. I dumped my small suitcase on the bed after inspecting the room before leaving. Not surprisingly, there were a couple of people I could speak to in this town about what happened. The facility had an imposing structure. Dark gray beams made to resemble a prison rather than a hospital. The harsh weather added to the gloomy atmosphere to the already miserable setting. An exhausted nurse with bags under her eyes barely looked up at me after I entered. The place smelled heavy of antiseptic, stale urine, and cheap coffee.
Hello. I'm here to speak with Mr. Smith.
She looked up, then tapped a few keys on her keyboard to bring up her name, never smiling or taking her gaze off the screen. Reaching over to grab a clipboard, then put it through the security screen.
Sign here. You'll have to leave by 5 p.m. Or if Mr. Smith has an episode.
Her bland, monotone voice responded. I complied, and she handed me a pass. I thanked her, but she went back to work, numbly tapping away, ignoring me. I opened the door to the ward.
What I remembered from the flyers and newspaper articles was that Mr. Smith was a strong, proud man,
who I saw rocking slowly in the corner in sharp, painful contrast to the broken man I saw. He was balding, with sores over his scalp, and stared out the open window while rocking back and forth. He lost nearly all of his muscle tone, and I hated myself for this comparison, but he reminded me of Gollum from Lord of the Rings. His patient uniform hung too loose on his small frame. Since he was the only man in the day area, it could only be him. Other women sat far away from him, talking to themselves or doing puzzles quietly. I checked the photo on my phone, and sure enough, it was him. I walked over to him and stood about a meter away, not wishing to overcrowd him. Mr. Smith, do you mind if we have a chat? He didn't answer, too caught up in his world, and kept staring out the window. A long line of drool from the right side of his mouth and the vacant look in his eyes gave me an unsettling feeling. I wanted to talk to you about a case. I could have sworn I saw a flicker of recognition in his eyes. I won't stay too long. I wanted to ask you about the Thompson case from 1972. Instantly, his face sharpened. Slowly, he turned to look at me, and behind his glazed-over eyes, I could see that he remembered the name.
What do you want to know?
Smith drawled, each word difficult to string together, his voice faint compared to the imposing man he once was. Do you remember anything about the case you would like to share with me? May I record you? It took him a long while to answer. The memories flooded back through his mind, addled with pain and medication. He turned his body around, his leg muscles small from a lack of use, and faced me. He nodded his head, and I began recording.
It was the aftermath that scared me. I would hear the voice from the recording, awake, asleep. I could never escape it. Same as that fucking recording.
He stopped.
I'd hear it occasionally. I'd get phone calls both to my house and to my office. Every couple of days. It never lasted long enough to trace.
Smith truly resembled a broken man.
They continued even after I retired.
Retired? That was a polite term for dismissed. I glanced down to check the light of the recorder. Still red. Perfect. I held the black pen between my fingers, gently tapping it against my teeth, and subconsciously leaned forward.
What did he say?
He thought for a long moment, and I wondered whether he would drift off into space.
It was the recording. Over and over.
Smith's body swayed when he said over and over, an endless loop. I was sure he could hear it even now.
Then he told me there would be others, that he was watching me.
He twitched with a fixed stare. I didn't want to provoke a new cycle of paranoia. I heard about the past incidents. However, it wasn't on record that he was being called personally. Is there anything he said that stood out to you?
Other than the usual threats? No. The fact he could. His voice.
He gestured to his throat, tapping it.
It never aged. Just stayed the same.
I wasn't surprised, and I couldn't tell him. Have you ever seen her?
Her?
Miss Thompson. He stared at me like I belonged in here instead of him, and I could barely manage to hold his gaze. It dropped down, and I felt my cheeks grow hot.
Do I look like an absolute moron to you?
The grim voice returned, and the steadfast detective returned. The shadow momentarily passed, and unfortunately made an uncomfortable return again. His body trembled, shaky hands, and his eyes darted back and forth repeatedly. He whimpered, unable to look around and focused on the ground. I felt guilty. I sat with limp limbs, powerless to pull him out of his episode, and watched him in this state, and wondered if I too would join their ranks.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
I jumped when I heard the infamous recording, except it didn't come from any of my devices. I thought I imagined it. I desperately looked around the room, and none of the other patients showed any sign of worry. They were too caught up in their world and in their mind-numbing tasks. Lawson screamed. His hands went up in his hair, then he pulled chunks of it out before covering his ears. His eyes clenched shut, teeth pressed sharply together, and his body thrashed around violently. Hey, it's okay. I heard it too.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
No survivors. Be careful what you wish for.
I heard it too, I murmured, completely out of my element, and I reached over in an attempt to comfort him. He shoved me hard, and I struck the back of my head on the window pane with a light crack. I slumped back, soothed it with my hand, and stared up at him in wide-eyed horror. He was screaming and driving his fingers into his ears, causing blood to trickle from them while his focus locked on the corner of the room.
No survivors.
It took far too long for help to arrive.
Pack up and leave right now. What happened?
A nurse snapped at me, while another went to comfort the former detective with four well-built orderlies to bring him down. Injected him with a sedative, his tense body flopping, and a glazed-over, vacant look in his eyes returned. I mumbled apologies to them, including the other patients, while I gathered up my belongings. I didn't get a chance to check them, as I was escorted out by an orderly, and thus ended the interview. Once I got to my car, I double-checked that I brought everything with me. A recorder, briefcase, notepad, phone. The only thing I dropped on the way was a pen. It was easy enough to replace. I got inside the car. I opened my laptop. It was off. I checked my phone. It was on silence with no apps open. Next was the recorder, still running, and I stopped it. There was no logical reason to hear that line. Maybe it was sending me mad. I thought about the possible people who knew I was here. The only other people were the patients or the staff. There was one thing I didn't check for. I flipped over the briefcase, ran my fingers along the sides, trying to feel for any bumps or strange ridges. Nothing new. No one, besides me, had come into contact with any of my property to my knowledge. My heartbeat was rapid, and I felt like I was being watched. A quick look around the car park showed nothing out of the norm. It was only half filled, likely with employee cars. Most of the cars were empty, or people either returned to their cars and leaving or driving away. I put my briefcase on the front seat, packed my gear inside, and wondered whether the case was making me crack under the pressure. Or maybe I already cracked. I checked my messages. Other than the usual spam, there was nothing of note I brushed past. An incoming call came in from my boss. I exhaled, finding my courage before I clicked the pickup button and put it on speaker. Hello?
Hey, how goes your investigation so far?
Everything follows the pattern I expected.
Yeah. Alright, well, update me if you get any new leads, and just record everything. You sound exhausted.
I scoffed. He had no idea, and I wasn't about to explain. Yeah, I've been on the road a lot. I was just visiting Smith.
How'd it go?
I scoffed. Not well.
Well, how many do you have left to visit?
3, maybe 4. I've been...
Oh, you...
There was a prolonged pause, and I had to check to see the call hadn't dropped out. A sharp static disturbed me. The call ended, and I figured I'd send an email when I got back. Staring at the dreary building was exhausting, and I stopped. I could have sworn I saw Smith staring down at me from one of the barred windows. I drove back to the hotel, grabbed some greasy fast food along the way. A good old American burger and fries with a Coke. Parking in the car park. Fortunately, I'd be here for a couple more days and wouldn't have to spend so much time on the road. I took my packed briefcase and folder, then climbed the stairs to get to my room. I used the card to open it, my suitcase still on the bed where I left it and hadn't been touched. I put my fast food on the counter and my briefcase on the small desk. I checked the bathroom in case of any visitors, along with a small balcony that looked out onto an overgrown piece of waste covered in litter. Not the most appealing view. I opened my briefcase to go over my notes and recordings. My laptop plugged in, the case file open, and the recorder close by. I went to shower, cleaned myself up before bed, and got dressed. I made myself some coffee and checked my phone. 10:42 p.m. I could have sworn it wasn't so late. The next two people I needed to visit in the case weren't officers. One, Mindy Jenkins, was Thompson's best friend and the last person to see her alive. And two, Lionel Livingstone, the crime scene cleaner. I had their names and addresses in a notepad, ready to go. I checked the recording, just to make sure it was there. It was faint, and the background noise made it difficult to hear, but those words repeated.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
I opened the audio file on my laptop and started to compare them to each other.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
To me, they sounded exactly the same. However, I wanted to consult an expert and emailed the portion to a sound expert for their opinion and feedback. I rested my forehead in my hands, going over the notes and comparing them to the old case files. From what I could tell, no one heard him beyond the old phone calls. What puzzled me was how she wasn't seen when she was a consistent presence for the others, drifting in and out throughout the years. I knew she was real. Her presence was well known, however, her motives were not. But he was an anomaly. A real person whose famous line had become his entire identity, and he was never seen, only heard. They were never seen together, from what I could gather. After taking notes, I fell asleep at my desk. The faint morning sun greeted me. I stared at the screen and hoped during the night the answers would come to me. I looked at the address. I decided to go to see Miss Jenkins first, since she was the closest, and prepared myself for the day. Mindy had been a high school teacher and retired when she married her wealthy husband. There were multiple interviews about Caroline's death. Some, including myself, thought it was particularly distasteful going to the tabloids about it. I found old clippings of what she said, how her friend had been a groupie, living a wild, secret life filled with drugs, sex, and had even conceived a kid out of wedlock. I wrinkled my nose in distaste, already not liking her exploration. She wasn't particularly liked by the backseat investigators either. I got ready for the day, drove out to her home, and found it on the wealthier part of town. 2 modern cars, 3-story McMansion, manicured lawns. Perhaps I should have called ahead, but I prefer to speak to people before they have time to prepare. I saw her with a fake smile, and she walked toward my car, her nose wrinkled as though she smelled something vile.
Excuse me, what are you doing here?
Mindy's condescending tone instantly ruffled my feathers. Yes, I'm here to speak to you about Caroline. I saw her eyes light up, practically beaming at the chance as I stepped out of the car with my briefcase filled with my interview items. She adjusted her shirt, her body covered in branded labels, and I guessed her other clothing was all designer, too.
Oh, well, I guess.
She tried to contain her smile now.
Please, follow me.
Every single detail about her clothing and home displayed wealth as power, all gained after her friend went missing and was later found dead. I was brought into the large atrium, decorated with gold plating, and sat down when a silent maid came to serve us drinks. Water was placed on the table even before I was offered some. Mindy sat across from me with an expectant smile that didn't fade. Since I needed something, I figured it was best to play along. You have a beautiful home, I commented, prepping the recorder for the interview. Do you agree to do this?
Yes, you may,
she answered smugly. What do you remember of the night Caroline went missing?
Haven't you read all the interviews I've given? I've mentioned it in those.
Mindy snapped, reaching for a cup of tea, and I had to hide my disdain for her. I have. However, this is to ensure nothing was missed. Ego. I have to play on her ego. You may be the only one who solves the case. Mindy beamed and stared off into space. I couldn't imagine what her thoughts were about. She stood and handed me a photograph of the pair of them, dressed in 70s clothes and smiling. You could see the happiness the pair had, and lost. It was strange seeing Caroline alive and vibrant, rather than a chilled corpse.
Oh, well, yes. Caroline and I had been friends since we were 5 years old. We did everything together, attached at the hip.
She paused, a flicker of genuine emotion on her face.
We started to grow apart right before it happened. She told me she was in love and had a boyfriend, although I never met him. I figured she was...
Her hand moved from side to side, trying to think of the best term.
Lying? I guess to seem cooler than she was.
She must have noticed the look I was giving her and shrugged.
She craved adventure, danger, and a life different from her own. She was always so quiet, and this was bringing her out of her shell.
This was in sharp contrast to the tabloids and interviews I saw of her, unless she had learned to act over the long years of doing this.
When it looked like interest in the case was dying down, I reached out to anyone who would talk to me.
Mindy's hands fidgeted, and she sighed.
At first, I wanted her found, and then I just wanted him brought to justice.
Did she tell you his name?
No, never. He was always very mysterious. I wondered whether he was a married man or someone she knew I wouldn't approve of.
Her body dropped. Under her makeup and facade, she looked strained, exhausted.
I guess she was right. Especially after what he did to her.
Did she tell you any details about him? What did he look like? What was his job? She sighed, leaning back, and seemingly forgot the social graces she desired to display.
I can't remember. She mentioned his voice being special, and they only saw each other at night.
Did she ever say how they met? She paused. Her blue eyes lingered on the tea table, and she tried to recall the memory.
I don't know. I think she told me that he found her. I'm not sure what that meant.
I nodded slowly. It made sense, but why was she targeted rather than somebody else? How would he select any victims in the future? These questions were still left unanswered. Have you ever heard his voice? She shook her head.
No, she never let me meet him. I remember him saying that he couldn't let her go, and that...
She grimaced and gulped, a tight, uncomfortable smile.
Recording.
Have you ever thought you've seen her? There was an uncomfortable silence. I thought for a second she was going to drop her cup and saucer. Instead, her manicured nails squeezed tightly around the handle, and it broke, spilling the contents on the floor. I took out a fresh tissue and helped her clean it up, taking the pieces in my hand and placing it on the table. Her face was white as a sheet, and finally she exhaled, leaned forward to rest her head on her hands. I didn't rush her.
Sometimes, at first, I saw her, walking past or briefly appearing. Then I noticed she was looking at me. She never aged. She looks the same as she did when she went missing.
Her voice shook.
I thought it was a guilty conscience, you know, from all the tablets, and I started seeing her around town. A face in the crowd.
Has she ever tried to speak to you?
No. No, she has winked at me once, or maybe twice.
She began. The tears came down her cheeks and shook. Having good people skills is part of the job. Unfortunately, I've never been good at it. I reached out, patted her shoulder once, twice, and handed her a clean tissue, which she accepted. Is there anything different about her? She closed her eyes, shivered, and nodded multiple times. What was different?
Her eyes.
She croaked.
They didn't look human anymore.
I had so many questions I still needed to ask her. I nodded my head in understanding.
I know you think I'm crazy. Her parents were so mad at me, even more so when I told them that I kept seeing her after her body had been found.
Mr. and Miss Thompson. Unfortunately, I couldn't speak to either of them, as they had already passed away. I knew they were highly religious, and frightened their daughter was going to end up going to hell. The pair became recluses and avoided contact with people after being continuously harassed by those interested in discovering more about her.
I'm sorry. I think it's best that you leave.
She looked up at me, her face flushed and swollen from crying. I didn't want to upset her too much, keeping my recording equipment on as long as possible. I packed everything else up. I'm sorry for bringing up painful memories for you. Could you please contact me if you remember anything? My information is all there. I handed her a business card that she looked at, nodding. I'll see myself out. With everything else packed away, I kept my recorder going until I reached my car and stared back at the mansion one last time. I put my briefcase on the passenger seat, turned off the recorder, and came away with some vague answers. Nothing concrete. I felt she was on the edge of telling me something important.
Wait, before you go, this was a necklace she gave me when...
She didn't continue, and handed me a closed gold locket with a stained chain that I accepted.
It feels dirty of me to keep it.
Before I told her that it wasn't really something I should have, Mindy turned to walk back to the car. I looked at it and tried to open it before I placed it in my pocket. I closed the passenger side door and went back to the driver's side, opening the door, and saw a pen there. My pen. I had other pens, but this one was from the Darling Cafe, and it was the one I lost at the mental hospital. Now the mystery of how it got here. I lifted it up, barely touching it there, and noticed a red lipstick mark on the end. Not wishing to tamper with any potential evidence, I found a plastic bag to put it in. I looked up and down the street, the mess of similar-looking McMansions, cars, and looked-after gardens didn't have anyone familiar. I texted my boss. Hey, I'm sending something over for analysis. A pen with lipstick. I'd need the results back ASAP. It beeped when I sent it off. I barely waited 30 minutes before I got a reply to drop it into the local police station, and they will send it off to the lab. Were there any traces of saliva? What brand was the lipstick? I hoped I wasn't making the biggest blunder of my career. I drove to the local police station, processed it, and filled in a considerable amount of paperwork, hoping it wasn't a random lost pen or that I wasn't deceiving myself. By the time I was done with it all, it was in the early evening, and I debated a long night drive versus waiting in town. One last person I needed to speak to, and I'd have to travel a considerable way. I didn't know if he would remember anything about the case. I went back to the hotel, and as I walked through the lobby, the receptionist called me over to tell me someone left a note. I accepted it, thanked her, and went up to my room. This time, my room was in chaos. My clothing was all over the floor, not that I brought a lot, and someone had slashed my bag for any parts. There was blood on the ground, and I stared down at it, enthralled, when I saw a shadow behind me. I should have checked the ensuite for anyone hiding inside.
Stop. Go. Sit on the bed.
The door closed. I kept my hands up to my side, frustrated I got caught out like this, and sat on the bed. I looked up and saw a man with a scruffy beard. He had a crazed look in his eyes, pointing a gun at me. And that was when I realized who it was from the photographs I saw, albeit much older now.
Detective Bradley, I asked, and he lowered the gun.
Yes? You're the one speaking to people about the Thompson case?
Yes. I thought this was drastic. If you wanted to speak to me, all he had to do was ask. He strode over to the window, pulled open the curtain, and obsessively peeked outside in either direction. He closed them, making sure no light could get out, and went to peek out the peephole.
Were you followed?
Bradley snapped. No, I didn't look.
You don't realize what you're facing, and... What's that in your hand?
He asked, gestured to the folded note in my hand that I forgot about. It was left for me at the front desk. I opened it, and there was an address close to the crime scene cleaner's house. I narrowed my eyebrows and held it up to show the retired detective. Do you know where this is? He took the paper in his hand, his wrinkled brow line heavy and slowly nodding. He paced back and forth, still with the gun drawn, and fidgeted with his hands. I didn't like how he was behaving with a firearm in his hand.
It's on the edge of town. Could be that abandoned place. Does it say who it's from?
His face was red, strained, and he wailed. No. No name.
Have you worked out what we're dealing with yet?
I don't think he has clearance, and I didn't want someone so unhinged having access to this information.
The government are aware of them and the sightings of her. He has been much more elusive. Oh.
He grunted.
You don't understand. Do they have your scent? Are they hunting you?
Bradley demanded, taking me by the shadows, and I held every instinct to punch him back.
No.
He gave me a coarse and smug smirk, reached into my jacket pocket, and pulled out the closed locket, dangling it in my face, so close it struck my nose.
You fucking idiot! She's hunting you now! They are hunting you! We need to hide you away from society so you'll be safe.
Other people have seen her. Mindy just gave me this. Why would they target me?
All the others, including myself, are going to be hunted. If we don't stop them, we can't let them make more. Do you understand? They won't stop. We need to go. Leave all your technology here. I don't want them tracing you.
The last thing I wanted to do was go somewhere alone with him while he was behaving like this.
I need evidence. If we find them, it will need to be documented.
From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go. The pair of us froze. From the first moment I saw her, I knew I couldn't let her go.
This time, it didn't sound like a recording.
Did you find anything? Touch anything at all? Did you bring anything connected with him directly?
He demanded sharply. Each time the phrase repeated, he'd wince as his eyes would dart around frantically, trying to find the source.
Fresh DNA. Did you touch anything with either of their DNA on it?
I tried to think of what it could have been. There was a pen I found with red lipstick. It was in my car, and I handed it into the police station to send it off for forensic testing. Bradley stared at me. His face dropped, and his shoulders slouched. He sighed, shook his head, and aimed the gun at my chest. I put my hands up again and took two steps backward.
I'm sorry. It's better I do this than let you endure what they have in store for you.
He flicked the safety off and aimed it at my chest.
No, you don't have to do this. We can stop them.
He froze, stared at something behind me that stood just over my shoulder. I turned my head to see nothing there, and I knew that was one of Caroline's new abilities.
What do you see? Is she there?
I moved to the side, and he pointed his gun at the empty space. No matter how much I pressed him to answer, nothing mattered to him. His arms shook violently, darting from side to side, and he shot at the empty air. Once, twice, and in the reflection, I saw Caroline for the first time. She wore a loose-fitting white dress, her hair loose, with inhuman, steady eyes that gazed out at me. Her lips moved as she spoke, with no sound coming out.
Caroline, stop!
I called out to her.
I know what happened. You don't need to kill him. We need to stop him from creating more like you.
The reflection was gone. I didn't care about clearance or being imprisoned if someone else overheard.
You're not a weapon of war. It was part of an experiment that went wrong.
She looked directly at me, her mouth moving, and gave a remorseful smile.
No survivors.
I grimaced at those words. There would only be one outcome. Bradley aimed the gun at his temple.
There can never be survivors.
His body fell to the floor with a loud slump. The blood and gore sprayed upward, coated the walls and me. It went in my hair, clothes, and even my mouth. I grimaced and spat bloody skin on the floor. I waited for the pair of them to come for me, kill me. I looked in the mirror and saw I was alone. I didn't hear the sound. I felt myself slipping from reality, and a new disassociation was hitting me. The police had been called, and I was messaged by my boss with a code phrase. Blue, red, pass, letting him know I was in danger. I sat in the gore. The warmth clung to me, and it only increased my hunger for the caves. I waited for the police officers to arrive on the scene. Surprisingly, none of the hotel staff came to see what had occurred, either. Perhaps they were dead. Fortunately, they didn't hang me out to dry. And the cover story was about a retired cop who finally lost their patience working on the case and ended his life tragically. The real autopsy was classified to be released publicly in the next 50 years. So perhaps your grandchildren will read it if they're aware of the case. I still hunt for Caroline and the unknown entity.